Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to On the Preds with me, your host, Alex Daugherty of A to Z Sports and Sean Smith of On the Forecheck, the show where we talk about the Preds, talk about plenty of hockey going on in Nashville. There is not a lot of hockey going on in Nashville right now because the Nashville Predators are not in the playoffs anymore, emphatically, having been swept. But nonetheless, Sean and I are going to continue this podcast going throughout the summer. Once a week, obviously on Sundays, as we normally do. And the only different thing about the summer is we will do audio only. So you're probably listening to this only on audio, unless for some reason you have created some sort of video version of this on your own, which would be very strange. But we are only going to do audio for the summer, and then we'll be back in the fall with full video on YouTube and everything. The only reason for that is because, you know, one of the highlights of doing a video is we can show kind of highlights and clips and interviews and stuff like that. And we really just don't have that for the summer. So it's boring to just sit there and look at our faces. I mean, maybe it's fun, but anyways, we're going to do audio only and we have plenty to talk about. So what's up, Sean?
Oh, man. I think it's funny here. You're saying unless someone creates their own, you know, animated version of this or something.
That's kind of what I was going for, like an animated version of it. Yeah.
I'm curious, like, what style it would be in. Are we going, like, Simpsons? Is it anime?
Like Squiggle Vision?
Squiggle Vision.
Like Dr. Katz? Yeah, Dr. Katz, home movies. Yeah, exactly.
I think that would be good. Just like a couple of really, really just, you know, cool dudes hanging around talking about hockey or the lack thereof.
Yeah.
I hope whoever animates it wouldn't make me, you know, too handsome. I'd hate to get people's expectations up in the off season and then come back, you know, for like preseason, people go, "Whoa, wait, who's this?" If they replace this handsome guy with some loser.
I was expecting the animated version of Sean.
Yeah. We don't like this real life version. The guy they got to play him looks terrible. But I think it's funny, you know, you say there's not a lot of hockey going on. It's you live in this weird world, I think, where you're like, you're so focused on one thing for such a long period of time from like September through, you know, through May. And then all of a sudden it's gone. But at the same time, there's still a few teams that are out there playing. And you're like, wait, what is this? Like, why am I not focused on this so much?
It is very strange going from the sort of constant presence of covering a team in your world every day. I mean, like, even when the team doesn't play, it's like every day you got to think about, okay, what am I writing about next? What's coming up on the schedule? What's on the horizon now for this team? And you know, obviously in the summer, there's still things going on. I mean, free agency, there's draft and stuff, but it's so much more stretched out. I mean, we have a month and a half basically until the next big thing, which is free agency and draft, like a month and a half. That's a long time. There's not been a stretch like that in a while because like of the, well, except for COVID, but that was obviously different. Nothing was happening then.
Nothing.
I ordered a Nintendo Switch.
Whoa.
To cover my summer months here because, and I'm not a big gamer. Like I'm not a video gamer, but I reached out to my good buddy, Chris Martel. I've been thinking about getting a Switch. Should I do it? What game should I get? So he gave me some good advice. And so I got a pretty good deal on one and I'm going to go with some Mario Kart. I'm going to go with some old school games. I'm going to pull up the online stuff where you can play all the old Super NES games
and
Nintendo 64 games. I'm going to do all that. So
did you go with the, like the full Switch or did you go with like the Lite?
The full thing, man.
So you're like committed.
I'm going full Switch.
Like, I'm playing this on the big screen. I'm not messing around. It's game time. What was the last console you've owned? prior
to this. I have a PlayStation 4, but that was like, I mean, I bought that like 5 years ago.
I can't even keep up with the PlayStations anymore. I think the last, I think I had a PlayStation 2 and a Wii, if that gives you any indication.
There you go. We have a Wii too. All right, we'll put the video game talk. We can come back to the video games at the end if you want. We can return to that. In fact, I might actually do that because it sounds interesting to talk about. But we do need to talk about one major thing that happened this past week, and that was the David Poyle, John Hines press conference, and at the same time announcement that John Hines has signed a two-year extension. There was a lot of stuff there. I mean, it was basically like almost an hour full of not just the conference, but the one-on-ones after, where we got a lot of really good stuff. Credit to the Preds for giving us pretty much unfettered access to David Poyle and John Hines for the better part of an hour, which is, I have not seen that in a while. It has been a long time, obviously Zoom and everything, it was impossible. But like even before that, with like Laviolette and 2019, 2018, you didn't really see that. So I think that was really good stuff. However, we did see a lot of the same, or hear a lot of the same kind of things. I'm interested to hear your take, but from my perspective, David Poyle, sounded a bit defensive in terms of the accomplishments of this team and like what the expectations actually were. He talked about the competitive rebuild, how he had labeled it that, and how, you know, in his mind they were competitive, and in his mind they also kind of rebuilt because they got some younger guys and they got full years out of younger guys like Alex Carrier and Tomasino, and they acquired Jeremy Lauzon, who's younger, I guess. He kind of defended the trade of sending a second round pick to Lauzon. He defended, you know, how the team was competitive on the ice. And he talked about how it was an exciting year with two 40 goal scorers and Roman Josi doing what he did and Juuse Saros. And, but he also laid the majority of the blame, any blame that can be said about the season, on himself, and said it was all about, I didn't give John Hines the team that he needed. Right. And so, I feel like that's the story of the last 5 years, is David Poyle has made roster mistakes, and here's another example of it. So what did you think about everything on Thursday?
I would have to agree pretty much with everything you said, just in general, the actual, I guess you'd say, press conference aspect of the event. I think the one thing I would point out, I might add, is that even though Poyle was willing to kind of shoulder the blame for not getting the players that Hines needed to get the job done, he also seemed to have a very, I don't know how you'd explain this. Like he wasn't just making excuses, but he really seemed like he wanted a little more credit for his past successes. You know, and we're talking 5 years after the fact. Like it was more like, I guess you'd say, like when you're trying to defend yourself against an accusation that you haven't done something very well, and instead of pointing to positive things you've done in the more recent history, you're talking about what happened 5 years ago. Almost like a small town high school quarterback who, you know, now like washes the cars at the used car lot. And they're like, you know, this car didn't get really clean. And he's like, yeah, but you remember when I threw those three touchdowns in the regional playoff game? And everyone's like, I mean, I remember that, but the car is not clean. Like, you're just going to have to re-clean it. I don't know.
Yeah, there is a lot of that sort of holding on to. Now, there was another part where Poyle talked about why. So, like, there were some questions about, especially if Forsberg is not re-signed, which we can touch on in a minute, is the team willing to, or is he willing to put the team into a deeper rebuild mode, like a more substantial actual rebuild mode where you suck for at least a couple years,
right?
Acquire some top picks. The answer seems to be like, no, that's not even on the table. There's no way they're going to do that. They will always try to be competitive no matter what. And it goes back to, as Boyle talked about, it goes back to his time running the team in 1998, starting the team in 98, when he needed to have a team that was competitive on the ice in order to build a fan base. And that worked. And it definitely, all obviously through the Trotz years, that very much worked. Like, that they built a really solid fan base by just being competitive and not necessarily competing for a cup or anything. But it feels like, you know, they kind of made the jump to real competition with Laviolette, and then they make the cup run. And now he's still gone back to the Trotz days, the early Trotz days, where we're like, oh, well, we just need to be competitive because we can't go into the tank because we'll lose our fan base. Like, I think that they're misreading this situation, don't you?
I don't know. I think his comment, and I don't have the exact wording, was something along the lines of, you know, you don't want to go through that. You don't, you know, you yeah. don't want to go through the 2 or 3 years of, you know, being a what you would call a tank team with the hope of getting a number one, you know, pick in order to get some, you know, get a generational talent on the team. Hopefully, you know, it's a big gamble. And I don't think the risk is worth the reward, because the reward may not come. I guess, you know, is he misreading it? Does he think he's going to lose fans because if they had a fire sale and got rid of everybody? I think you would lose a lot of fans that are there for the party. You know, I think the people who understand the concept of building a team and what it takes to put a team together and how, you know, the ebb and flow of draft picks and draft lotteries and, you know, good draft classes versus weaker draft classes are going to say, you know, this is a smart move because it'll pay off in a couple of years. But the people who want to go watch the team win may not stick around for that. So I don't know how far off he is. Maybe you and I disagree on that a little bit, but do you think it's worth just tearing the team down at this point?
I think it's, what's clear to me is that unless the team has, look at the last few cup winners. I mean, like, it seems very clear you need a generational talent to really make it in this league. I mean, a Nikita Kucherov, a Steven Stamkos, an Alex Ovechkin, a Sidney Crosby. Now, the Blues year is a little bit of an anomaly because, like, they didn't really have one of those. I mean, I guess Tarasenko and Ryan O'Reilly were the biggest two, but, like, those guys are not on the level as those other names that I just mentioned. The Patrick Kane, Jonathan Taves, those guys. So, like, all of those players I just mentioned were acquired by sucking for a few years. Now, the Tampa one, Tampa didn't suck as much as, you know, the other teams. So, like, if you could do it kind of like how Tampa did it, where you are relatively competitive, you're not really competitive for a cup, but, like, you don't lose your fan base by being, like, awful, that would be the way to do it. So, like, I think there is a path through that. Tampa would be the model. But Tampa also had, like, they hit rich on a lot of really good players, like, down, like, in I mean, Nichushkin was not a high draft pick. Stamkos was. I mean, where was Nichushkin drafted? Not I'm saying Nichushkin. I'm thinking of Valerie Nichushkin. I'm talking about
Kucherov?
Yes, Kucherov, sorry.
Yeah.
Not Nichushkin. I'm thinking about Nichushkin because I was going to mention something later, but Kucherov was a second round draft pick.
Yeah.
So,
well, and it'll be interesting. Be interesting to see who the Predators take in the second round.
Oh yeah, they don't have that pick.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Okay, so, like, I will say this: they do have a couple players that they've gotten in the first round that I think could be, like, solid. I mean, like, Askarov. All signs point to Askarov being, like, an elite goalie in this league, and he's here. He's going to be in Milwaukee next year.
Yep.
I bet we'll see him by 2023, 2024.
Yeah.
And then, like, he's going to be good. I mean, he has a better promise than or at least as good of a promise as Vasilevsky in Tampa, who is incredible. So like, that's kind of his track. Anyways, we'll talk more about that. But back to the press conference, I think that the big question for Poile was kind of what we're talking about. Is he willing to take the team into the dumps in order to get a top draft pick? And that the answer seems to be no.
Yeah.
So
I think that's an okay answer too. Like, I don't have a problem with that. I'd much rather see a team compete.
Here's the thing. I think I would be interested to see what it would look like. What would a fan base that you've built up over the last 24 years actually look like if the team sucked for 2 years? If the team committed to being terrible for 2 years, like I'm talking like an Arizona level, like Buffalo, Ottawa, like a really deep, like where you are obviously going to have a top three pick.
Right.
What would that actually look like? What would the fan turnout actually be like? I think the sellout streak would definitely be gone, and they would not sell out every game. But I don't think it would dip below like 10,000. I think you'd have 12,000 to 14,000 every night, which is like better than those other teams I mentioned. I mean, Ottawa's not pulling 12,000, 14,000 a night.
No,
Arizona is not pulling half that.
I think you're right. I think you would have really good attendance still. I don't know that you'd sell out every game, but you have to remember too that, you know, when it comes to, okay, so the on-ice product, right? That's mm-hmm. coming from David Poile, but then you've got everything else that goes on at the arena, and that's coming from Sean Henry. And he's proven to be pretty good at putting on a spectacle and making a show that people want to come see. So, you know, you'd have people that were going to come.
Here's a comparable. I just pulled up some attendance things, because the reason I'm talking about attendance is, do you remember what Poile said about the attendance thing, about how if he's not worried about fan apathy, because if the attendance was like only 6,000 a night or something like that, then he would be worried. But if fan attendance is there, he's not worried. So that's why I'm going back to attendance, because I think that's the marker for him.
Okay.
And for the front office. All right, let's take Columbus, for example. Columbus was not a competitive team this year. They didn't make the playoffs. Columbus pulled 16,000 fans a night. Like, I think the Predators could absolutely manage a couple years pulling 15, even 14,000 a night for 41 games, not making the playoffs, commit to having a top 10 draft pick for a couple years in a row, and be fine, and come out of it better on the other end, and actually rebuild, play to their strength. They do have a pretty good scouting system and a good draft strategy. Usually, not all the time, not with forwards, but generally speaking, they have a pretty good ability to draft at least two of the major positions. If a team like I mentioned Columbus because they're an expansion team in a non-traditional market, well, somewhat of a non-traditional market, and they seem to be they didn't really miss a lot of their attendance. They had like 90% capacity.
Yeah.
So I think that there's something. To me, I think he's not seeing what could actually be, and it goes back to I continue to think that David Poile, the time for David Poile is over. I think that they need to have total new front office management to run the team at this point. I think he's not quite in touch with what needs to happen with this team right now.
Well, you know, in light of that comment, there's probably got to be a line of thought for him as well, that if he says, okay, let's tank. I'm sure that's not the word that would come out of his mouth, but you know, let's do a total rebuild, let's tear it down. That also kind of signifies, and I guess you have to think about this in the context of where he is in his career. If you have been working at something, you know, let's say post 2017, you know, okay, we're trying to build a team that's going to win the cup or at least be in competition for it every year, and you see that the results are kind of stagnant, if you say we're going to tear it all down, you're either going to be viewed as someone who's willing to do what it takes, no matter what it is, or you're going to be viewed as someone who is ineffective because you're giving up on your plan. This was my plan. This is what we've been working on. And then at this point in his career, if he says, my plan didn't work, we're going to have to start over. That would probably be a signal to people that his time is done, if that makes sense. So I guess I can see it from the perspective of, it would be a very good move. The fan base could endure a couple of years. But trying to look at it from the human side of David Poyle, it would also probably signify that he was done. And I think that may be what's holding him back from making. If he were 55 or 60 years old, I don't think it's as much of a signal that the career is over. But I think if you make that decision at this stage in the career, you're saying, hey, what I'm doing is not working.
Yeah, I think that unless he comes to that realization, it's not going to happen. But there's a lot to – there's so much credit that David Poyle deserves for everything with this franchise. I just think – everything has to end at some point. And I think this is kind of the time when it probably should end, because you don't want an ineffective GM to also do your rebuild. Go get a GM that can rebuild you the right way. So that's just kind of where I'm at with it, but
get you a GM that can do both. Who would you take? Who do you think could,
I don't have a good read on GMs in the NHL that are available. That is a worry, right? I mean, like, if you fired David Poyle, who do you get in his place? Who do you bring back, or who do you get put in that spot? I mean, I think Scott Nickel has promise.
Yeah,
Scott Nickel would be not exactly fresh blood, but I think he probably has a better read on the young game in the NHL, and he would not necessarily get stuck in, I've got relationships with these guys, so these are the guys I'm hiring. I don't know Scott Nickel. I'm guessing here, but I would be willing to bet that Scott Nickel would be kind of a fresh set of eyes. And he's obviously he's the GM in Milwaukee right now. So, and then obviously, as you probably are thinking, that could give Carl Taylor a good chance to become the coach. Speaking of coach, John Hines signs a 2-year deal. Just real quick on that, I think we both agree that that's a good signing, right?
100%. I really had a, I don't know. I don't know why. And I'm sure that people on the Twitter would be more than happy to tell me. I don't see a lot of great reasoning behind a lot of the hatred that he's receiving. It just seems to be a lot of knee jerk team didn't win playoff game, coach bad. And I don't think that's
it's just people not being reasonable or not thinking about what's actually happened. When you consider the path that John Hines has actually had in Nashville, I think David Poyle is right. He has not gotten a fair shake. He's not had everything that he needed. He's had exactly one training camp to run with this team, which is a very important thing, because that is when you install all of your processes. That's when you install, here's what our offense is going to look like. Here's the roles everyone's going to have. Here's your goals for this year. Here's our mindset from day one. Here's where we want to be by game 82. Here's where we want to be going into the playoffs. Like, that's where all that happens. He's had one chance at that. He's been able to do that one time. Maybe give him another couple of chances at that before you say, he's got to go, he sucks. Everyone wants to point to this record in New Jersey. Like, that New Jersey team was awful. And he still got him to the playoffs.
Yeah, he did. I think what's more to his credit, again, I tend to look at things from the human side here and less of the hockey business side. I don't know why, but you hear the way that the players on the team have talked about the team, and the way they support each other and things like that. And I mean, I know there's been teams that have done that before, and I know that when you're winning, for example, it feels really good and you feel a sense of camaraderie, but it seems like this team this past season has really played for each other. They've really had each other's backs. You even look at things like, look at Connor Ingram coming up and playing, and the relationship he developed with Mark Borowiecki very quickly. You know, that doesn't happen in a toxic environment. That doesn't happen in an environment where people will praise each other in public and snipe each other, you know, in private. So I think building a culture amongst that team and doing it in spite of, you know, dealing with COVID and coming in the middle of a season and just having all of these, you know, it's really, if you look at from the time he was hired to the beginning of this, his first full season, what a weird ride that must have been to be the new guy. And goodness, to come through that, take the team, a team with Luke Kunin playing 82 games in the regular season and Nick Cousins out there, Nick Cousinsing, and to still make it to the playoffs. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
I think the Luke Kunin thing is probably the one thing on John Hines' resume that is probably not good for him. I mean, the fact that he kept up with he does make odd decisions. Hines does. I mean, the decision to roll out Ben Harper for half the season was odd. I guess it was part of the building the physicality of the team, but like it just really there were so many times when it didn't work. Relying on Luke Kunin as a top six winger all year. The decision to move down in the lineup, demote, I guess, guys like Tolvanen and Tomasino at times when maybe they really needed better chances and not worse chances. And then, you know, some of the line shuffling people don't like as much. I think the decisions to ride UC Saros hard was maybe against him, but it does sound like UC Saros was like all about it. He was like, but players are going to do that. They're going to be like, I want to play every game. And Saros is like a young guy. So he's like, I feel great. Send me out there, coach. The coach needs to step in and be like, you know what? You've played 68 games this year. You need to sit for a little bit because we need you. Real quick though, before we talk about the next thing, we need to mention we still have sponsors for this show, and that would be Relax the Back.
Oh,
so here's the thing with me, Sean. I have awakened almost every day with some neck pain in my like some neck and like upper back and shoulder pain. I don't know what's happening. I don't know why this is, but I think it could be my pillow. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to 2020 Glen Echo Road, Relax the Back store right there in Green Hills, Tennessee. And I'm going to talk to Glenn and maybe anyone else that's on staff about a possible pillow replacement. They've got this thing called the Tempur Neck Pillow. It's a Tempur-Pedic pillow. They've got a contour side pillow, which is like a cradling. Maybe I need to like, if I lay on my side, so like maybe I need to be have a little side pillow that's like a perfectly contoured. Anyways, I don't know what I need, but I need something because my neck pain is bad. So I'm going to go to Relax the Back to check it out. If you want to work better, live better, feel better every day, you've got to go to Relax the Back. If you sleep well, you will live well. I've been sleeping okay. I've been waking up with neck pain. It's really annoying. So they have tons of options for customized comfort when you sleep, work, or just relax at home. Obviously, I've talked about the pillows for sleep, but like they've got zero gravity chairs. They've got these wonderful massage chairs that are incredible technology, Technogel mattresses. You've just got to go to check out the store, 2020 Glen Echo Road in Green Hills. You know where it is. If you've been to Green Hills, you know exactly what we're talking about. It's in that little hovel over there where there used to be a GameStop. What are you laughing at?
Hovel?
Yeah. Okay. It's by like Hillsborough High School and everything. So it's like perfect. But you'll go there and you'll learn about the four pillars of wellness: healthy sleep, healthy work, healthy body, and healthy mind. One thing that was also mentioned in the press conference, Philip Forsberg came up. So if I was to make a chart, we love charts, right? If I was to make a chart of general confidence in signing Philip Forsberg, it would have been steadily going, just steadily, but not sharply going up over the course of the season. I would have been pretty confident that they were going to sign Forsberg. Okay. Okay. Even through the trade deadline, especially through the trade deadline, because I think if Poyle had any inkling that he couldn't sign him, he would have traded him. So it's been steadily going up. But then at game four of the playoffs, when Philip Forsberg does that little skate, the slope would have flattened in terms of my confidence. It would have been flat now. All of a sudden, we're not going up in confidence anymore. And then it would have started going down after what David Poyle said on Thursday. And the reason is because for the first time, he mentioned a plan B, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said the very legalistic sort of, we're working with him. We feel very confident he wants to come back. We know we want to have him back. We just got to work out the details. But there's always a plan B and a plan C and a plan D. That's the first time he's mentioned that.
He mentioned those plans, and I think, you know, he made the comment later on that people kept bringing up the $10 million of cap space. You know, mm-hmm. played the whole season with $10 million of cap space, blah, blah, blah.
But that wouldn't have mattered for this. That wouldn't have mattered for Forsberg. I don't know why people brought that up.
Well, no, but the thing is, he made the comment that if they re-sign Forsberg, that would take up most of that cap space. But the problem is it doesn't. I think people hear, you know, oh, Forsberg wants $9 million a season. That doesn't mean that the Predators would have $1 million left in cap space. Yeah. They already pay him $6 million a year. You're talking about $3 million more. Well, you're talking about still having $7 million in cap space, you know, based on this season, much less all of the other contracts and things that are going to fall off.
Well, if that's what people think, that's way off base, because that's not how it works. Like next year, the Predators have right now $25 million in cap space. If they were to sign Forsberg even at $10 million, they'd have $15 million more to sign guys like, I mean, they're not going to sign these guys, but like Cousins is expiring. Matt Benning is expiring. There's RFAs like Cunnan and Matt Luff and Jakob Trenin. They have way more money. I've been saying this since day one. They have they have so much money to spend on this. There is not a money issue in any way.
Sorry, you're exactly right, and that's the thing is, and I'm going to tell you, you know, you said if people think that, they're way off base. People think that, Alex. People who like hockey that know that I cover the team. They
should listen to this damn show, because we will tell them the truth.
We should change the name to this damn show.
Tell them to listen to this show. They will get the truth. The Predators have $25 million in 2022-2023 cap space to spend on Philip Forsberg. They could go sign Johnny Gaudreau, too, if they wanted to. They could spend $20 million on Johnny Gaudreau and Philip Forsberg and still have $5 million left.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is my question is, you know, you hear them talk about plan A being signed Philip Forsberg and then giving the excuse that takes up most of the cap space, but it doesn't. And the thing is, so if there's a plan B, and there's a plan B that involves not having Forsberg and $25 million worth of cap space, who are you going to go out and get to come in and play not just the Philip Forsberg role, but to play all of those other roles that we've been hearing them talk about the needing the firepower on the second line. And that's what's a little concerning to me, is that if Forsberg walks, I don't know that you can replace him.
I mean, not in-house. No, they have to go get somebody.
But who are you going to go get? Because now you have to entice someone to come play. And it's like, hey, you could come play with Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchene. They just scored 40 goals apiece. But then you take away that Forsberg element. You can't use him as a draw to get someone to come play in Nashville, because it says, hey, look what we just did to Philip Forsberg. We let him walk.
Yeah.
Come sign a contract.
So on the money issue, on whether or not he's willing to spend the money, at the press conference Thursday, I forget who was that asked him this, said, are there any budget – it might have been Joe Rexroad. Are there any budget restrictions from above in terms of like why he didn't spend at the cap? The answer was no. There's no. He's not been given any budget restrictions, and he said also the reason he didn't spend at the cap is he just didn't feel like the time was right to go ahead and go all in. I think that's probably a wise move. I think he's right. I think if they had spent the cap and then gotten swept, that would be even worse, right? I mean,
Yeah, well, and not just that, but if you look at the past season, you know, for example, and see what you're coming off of with a, you're not coming off of a full season, you're not coming off of a normal season. It wasn't a good year, I think, to make big commitments contractually, and so you know, saving some space, if the, you know, if a possibility opened at the trade deadline for a really big, you know, acquisition, a big, you know, trade and sign type of deal. You know, it's good to have that leeway, I guess.
I think he's done with the trade and signs. I think he does. I think he got burned with the Kyle Turris thing. You know, like he wants
No, I mean, I get it.
You know, you make a good point. I mean, you could have seen something like that. I mean, there were guys that were eligible for that kind of a thing. And, that wouldn't have been out of the question. I just think Poile is like, I'm never doing that again, ever.
What do you think? I mean, there's a $10 million hole on your roster, though. I mean, clearly that was probably earmarked for somebody. You know what I mean? Like, I know that there's a lot of talk like, oh, we had to move some contracts to create some space for the future. But I don't think they were talking about clearing contracts and making space for the future in a season or two. I think there was probably a swing and a miss somewhere out there.
I think it was, I think probably they were anticipating, I don't know that for this year, the $10 million gap this year, I don't think they were planning to do anything with. I think it goes back to what they were planning on doing for next year, starting next year, because that's when all of the major contracts would kick in with big money, like all the Yossi contract, the Ellis contract, the Duchesne, Ekholm's, like all of it would really kick in. That was a big year. So like, I think it was just preparing. I think this year was more about he wanted to try to see how many of his young guys could break out and see if they could do it with a little bit of cap space. And, you know, they were one of the only teams with that much cap space to actually make the playoffs. So maybe the only team. But on the note of budget restrictions, Poile said there was no restriction for this year and there's no restriction for this summer either. And he said, I think he suggested that we can expect to see them spend some money. So like, you're not going to see them go out and just like, oh, we made one signing. We signed Paul Stastny to a $4 million contract and we're done. Like, they're not going after Paul Stastny, but I'm just saying that like that, you're not going to see that. You're not going to see, we made one signing of a $4 million forward and we're done. I think you're going to see some money spent. I don't know exactly what, maybe there's trades involved. Who knows? But the big names obviously are Johnny Gaudreau. Nazem Kadri is a free agent. I would really be surprised if they went after him. Patrice Bergeron is retiring. I think Claude Giroux is a question. Two names that came up. Now, do you remember this? When we were talking to John Hines on the side conversation, he mentioned two players. Do you remember who he mentioned?
I do. He talked to...
We were talking to John Hines, and he was talking about it was a really good conversation about the overall kind of skill level of his team and where they want to get next year. And it was kind of part of a larger conversation where he was talking about how the progression has always been get physical this year, get big and physical this year, which
right.
Check mark, job check. Accomplished. You did that. And how. Yeah. And then to add skill and speed next year, or not necessarily speed, but definitely add skill.
Right.
And two names that he mentioned, which were interesting, is he mentioned Andrei Burakovsky and Valeri Nichushkin of the Colorado Avalanche. Now, was he mentioning these two players just because it was fresh on their mind? They had just faced these players and they came to mind, they scored some goals, like they're good players, they're fast. Or were these players that could be targets for the Predators? Because both of those players are free agents. Burakovsky, Nichushkin, both free agents. Burakovsky's 27. He's a wing. And Nichushkin is also a wing. He's 27. They're both 27. Both expiring free agents of Colorado this coming summer.
Are they unrestricted free agents?
Unrestricted.
They're
definitely past their RFAs. Nichushkin, they're both actually very interesting stories. I mean, Burakovsky had so much promise in Washington and then was traded, I believe, to Colorado. Maybe he wasn't traded. Nichushkin definitely was not traded. Nichushkin is the one that came into Dallas and was like a really pretty had a lot of promise as a as an elite scoring winger, had struggles, went back to Russia for 2 years, came back to finish his contract. He went the Radulov route. He came back to North America to finish his contract with Dallas, then signed a free agent contract with Colorado and has been great. I mean, he had a great year. I can't see them signing either one of those players, but I thought it was interesting that he mentioned them. There's tampering rules, but I think they really only apply to David Poile. David Poile didn't mention a single name. Obviously, he can't. But I don't think John Hines – I think John Hines can say whatever he wants. So interesting that he mentioned those. Maybe those have come up in conversations. Who knows?
Well, I think, you know, definitely fresh on their minds. I mean
– it's probably more they just faced them, yeah.
I mean, you get punched on Monday. You still have the bruise on Friday, right?
That's right. So. We're gonna dive. We have so many weeks to dive into free agency, but there's a lot of interesting names out there. I mean, like Rickard Rakell is a free agent. I really like him as a scoring winger. Rickard Rakell he really outshined a lot of players out in Anaheim, and then had a pretty good showing in Pittsburgh too. And Pittsburgh has all kinds of cap issues, so I don't think they're gonna re-sign him. Rakell's
name always comes up too. I mean, anytime he's available, there's a lot of interest in him from a lot of teams. I think he would be a great fit, honestly. Just, yeah. I mean, you've seen what he can do, and it does it wherever he goes. So
Max Domi is available. But I don't know the situation with Carolina. Maybe they're going to re-sign him. Who knows? Callie Yarncroke. There's a lot more names on here. We're not going to go through all this now, but we'll have plenty of time to talk about those. But there's some interesting options, and the Predators could really go after that. The only thing I wanted to mention before we go is to close on the Forsberg thing. I am now not as confident as I was before that they would re-sign him. During the season, I was pretty confident it was going to get done. I really don't know now. I mean, all these numbers that are throwing around about he wants 9.5 or he wants, you know, north of 9 and they only want to give him 8 just makes me think they are really going to get hung up on this Yossi thing, that he can't get more than Yossi, which is the stupidest thing that anyone had. That argument, if that's what they think, is they can't give Forsberg more than Roman Yossi, they deserve to have him go off in free agency. Like, that's such a stupid way to think about it. Forwards get paid more than defensemen. It just happens. I don't care how good the defenseman is. Forwards get paid more than defensemen. They're more important for scoring, and scoring wins games. Like, I'm sorry. It just doesn't make any sense that you would sit there and say, well, he can't make more than 9.05 or 0.59 or whatever it is that Yossi gets. That's such a stupid argument. Just pay him what he wants. Who cares?
Scoring wins games. Defense wins championships, Alex. I mean, or is that just football? I don't know.
Roman Yossi scores. That's why he gets paid this high. If Roman Yossi wasn't the elite scorer he was, he would be getting like $6 million a year.
Yeah. I think you're right, though. If the hill you want to die on, and you want your franchise to die on, is that no one can get paid more than Roman Yossi, then you're really just saying we're not willing to have someone who's going to come in and be, you know, not guaranteed, but at least a threat to score 40, 50 goals every season. And if that's what you want to do, then you're going to have to get your scoring from somewhere else. And it's going to have to be a team effort. It's going to have to come from the second line and the fourth line. And I'm not going to complain about the third line this year because quite frankly, I thought they did a pretty good job. But
if you look at, I'm sorry, I'm stuck on this thing with the defenseman. Okay, 1, 2. Hang on, I'm counting. 3, 4. Top 25 contracts in terms of cap hit this year. Top 25 contracts.
Okay.
4 are defensemen.
Okay.
1, 2. 2 are goalies.
Yossi.
The rest are forwards, huh?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Would it be Yossi, Carlson?
Yossi, Carlson. Do you want to guess, or do you want me to tell you?
Petrangelo.
Not Petrangelo.
No. Okay.
Doughty, because he's had that contract forever.
Yeah.
And where is it? Dougie Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Those are the four defensemen. The two goalies are Sergei Bobrovsky and Carey Price.
Yeah.
So the rest are forwards, and they're not even like incredible forwards. I mean, like they're good forwards, but they're like They are incredible forwards. I'm not saying that they're not good. What I'm saying is they're not
all Connor McDavid. Good
player on their team. Mitch Marner is one, for example.
Yeah. Right.
Mitch Marner's the third best player forward on that team. So right. Like there's a lot of forwards in the top 25 that are just like they're not Wayne Gretzky. You know, they're not Mark Messier or something. They're like right. They're just really good players that are probably going to be great on their team, but they're not Hall of Fame players or anything. Like they're just right. Really good.
Yeah.
Tyler Seguin. I mean, like I think there's a why am I talking about that? Because Forsberg should get paid more than Josi. I'm sorry, it's just true. Forwards should get paid more than defensemen. You paid Roman Josi $9 million. I think it's a fine contract. That's fine. I think Philip Forsberg can get 9.5 or 10 because that's kind of where things are going.
I mean, can we just be realistic here and point out the fact that they're paying Ryan Johansson $8 million a season?
What are you saying? Are you saying that they?
So if there is a problem paying Forsberg more than Josi, you certainly can't have a problem paying Forsberg more than Johansson. I mean, he's getting $8 million a year.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I think the floor of where they want to pay Forsberg is definitely above $8 million. I wouldn't be surprised if they're coming back to him with like 8.25 or 8.5. And he's like, no, I want 9.5. I mean, which I is a
that's
crazy,
fine.
Yeah. If it comes down to just like $1 million difference, that's so dumb. I mean, why people think that matters so much? Because would you rather overpay Forsberg by $1 million or $1.5 million? Or would you rather take a risk signing like four different forwards who may or may not produce at less than that overall cap hit and sucking like bad?
I always think back in situations like this, Alex, to the Oakland days back in the 70s. And, you know, I think for me, and this is not going where you think it is unless you're thinking this, but, you know, you just say, look, you know, we're going to pay you, you know, what do you want? You want 9.5? Okay, look, we're going to give you 8.5. We're going to guarantee that you have a $2 million contract to endorse mustache wax for the rest of your tenure in Nashville. And there now, look, you're making $10.5 million, but it's 8.5 on paper, and everybody's happy. I mean, you know what? Create your own mustache wax, and you'll sell out. Mustaches are very popular right now, Alex. They're really missing an opportunity to not just keep Forsberg in Nashville, but to create a brand of mustache wax that meets the needs not just of elite hockey players, but of your everyday mustache wearer.
I mean, they should probably go for that. I was just looking at the most comparable the most comparable player that I can think that the contract that I think they should fit. Now, it's not a perfect match because this contract was signed a couple of years ago, but I think in terms of player fit and value to the team would be Mark Stone. Mark Stone makes 9.5 a year. Mark Stone is not the goal scorer that that Forsberg is. He's probably a better overall player, like all around player, because he's really good playmaking forward. He's great defensively. Like Mark Stone's very, very good. Makes 9.5 a year. That would be the contract I think would fit perfectly for Forsberg. 9.5 a year. He's incredibly good offensively. I mean, just had 40 goals. He's only – how old is he? I don't even know. 27, 28? How old is Forsberg?
27, right? I think.
27. So 9.5 would make sense. No one seems to think – look, Mark Stone didn't take the Vegas Golden Knights to the promised land. He had some injuries, I know. But, like, no one seems to think that that contract is too overpaid. People were like, oh, that's a great deal for Mark Stone when he signed that. Like,
yeah.
Why there's this like quabble over Forsberg is only worth $8 million. He's only worth $8.5 million.
But how much
pay him, him 9.5. Just do it. Sorry, go ahead.
How many goals did Mark Stone score in the playoffs this year?
None, because Vegas did not make the playoffs.
Oh, that's right.
Not his fault. It was not necessarily on him, but
I'm just saying, you know, like you said, there he didn't take them to the promised land, didn't even take them to the playoffs. So, you know, it's not like it's a great again, it didn't guarantee a cup every season, and signing Forsberg to $9.5 million won't do that either. But I think you're a better team with him on it than you are without. So pay the man.
Anything else you want to mention before we go?
I just want to say how nice it was to actually have the opportunity to talk to John Hines, you know, in a non media availability, you know, press conference setting. Really, you know, we haven't really had that opportunity. I mean, what he got hired. They had, well, I don't know. They didn't have a ton of games before COVID hit and the season shut down. So I think getting that opportunity just to talk, you realize this guy wants to talk hockey. He wants to talk shop, and it's pretty impressive to see him go. He's, like you said, he's recalling just off the top of his head specific plays from games 6 months ago, and the impact it's had on players. I feel like he could pretty much walk you through every game the team played this season without having any prep time at all if you asked him tomorrow. And that was just impressive to me. It tells you, I think, and not saying that other coaches can't do similar things, but I don't think I've seen one be able to recall something with that much detail from 6 months ago just on the fly. So that was pretty impressive. It was a good conversation.
We had a good conversation with him, and I got some really good information on Philip Tomasino that I'm going to be writing about sometime soon for A to Z Sports. And you can check that out at azsports.com if you choose to. But I will say this about John Hines. I think he's got a plan for a long-term plan for how he wants to take this team. And I think 2 years is a really good amount of time to see if that plan works. Now, at the end of this 2 years, because it's next season, 2022, 23, and 23 and 24. If at the end of those 2 years, you've not seen any progress, then I think fans can really clamor for real change, because I think that his kind of a plan does take a little bit of time. But after 2 years, if you don't see any progress, if you don't see an increase in the skill and the competition level, like there's going to be issues there. But I think he's got a plan. I think his plan makes sense. I think he's got a real good idea for how to develop players like Philip Tomasino, who we talked about, the young defensemen like Alex Carrier, Dante Fabbro. I think he's got a good sense for what kind of competition is required for which team. So like he knows that playing a team like Calgary and a team like Tampa and a team like Colorado requires a different level and a different strategy. And so he's not going into it just boilerplate, we're going to do the same thing every night. He knows how to, he knows how to ins and outs of coaching his team over an 82 game season. And it's just, they didn't have the horses in the playoffs. Like they just didn't.
No. And that's something David Poile said. I got to go out this off season and get some dogs.
Horses, dogs, soldiers.
Dogs. Got to get that dog in them. That's what you need.
That's right. All right. So hopefully you enjoyed this audio only version. You didn't get to see us, but you heard us. And you can check out all the hockey coverage you want at azsports.com. Please also go to ontheforecheck.com as well. They always have really good draft stuff over there. So when the draft hits, definitely check it out there. Eric does a fantastic job prepping everyone for the draft. Because if you're like me, I don't have time to go follow all these prospects and everything. So I just spend a lot of time on the forecheck, going and checking out everything there.
Not
just Eric, but like Rachel does a lot of good stuff there. Sean usually has some stuff up recapping the draft and all kinds of stuff too, right? don't you?
You are not going. Yeah, I usually get to talk to the players after they get drafted, which, you know, comes from those conversations come from me asking Eric, hey, Eric, tell me about this guy.
Yeah, right.
And then Eric Dunay is probably, I don't know if you're going to find a better prospects guy.
He knows what he's doing, and he watches the games. Like, I mean, he does.
He puts in the work. Absolutely just incredible draft coverage. And I'll tell you, and I don't mean to just extend this and make this an Eric Dunay fanboy session here, but, you know, going into things like the prospects game or, you know, the camps and things like that, knowing what he's told me about those players really allows me to watch those players better.
Yeah.
And then when I have the opportunity to follow up with them to really ask, you know, good questions that let them know, like, hey, you know, I'm not just some guy who is here covering the team, but I'm familiar with your work. I know who you are and where you come from. And all of that 100% comes from Eric. And, I mean, he's absolutely incredible.
There's no way that we could do that we could cover everything that happens with this team and also all of the potential all of the prospects that are currently in the system, but also all of the draft coverage where you're wondering, you know, who's going to be available and what league they play in and what their competition level is like.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is very difficult. You have to rely on people who know what they're doing and who spend the time to talk about that. And Eric's great at that. So you have to rely on that. And I always do because he's great at it. Like I said, not just Eric, but I know Rachel watches a lot of that stuff and she pays attention to it. And everyone on the forecheck knows prospects. So kudos to them. So be paying attention to that. And I think we'll have more coming up. I mean, we got so much to talk about over the next few weeks. So stick with us. Follow me on Twitter at AlexDaugherty1. Follow Sean on Twitter at SCSOTF. We'll see everybody next week. Sean is still waving, even though we can't see him.